Welcome to episode 108 of the Nerds Assemble podcast.
This week we'll be looking at D4, DC t-shirts, Kickstarter, Twin Peaks, and our feature this week, who we would want to play us in a film about our life story.
Hi, I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
I'm sorry, we've got no cookie this week, but as ever, you can find the notes for this episode over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk, where you can comment and find links to our social accounts. Plus, you can get in touch and ask us questions or comment on the show by email at contact@nerdassemble.co.uk or tweeting us at nerdspodcast. You were pointing at a thing. Why were you pointing at a thing?
Because you've got the website address wrong, nerdassemble.co.uk. O-U-K.
I don't know where that extra O came from.
Maybe it's meant to be cool. It's a
good thing. Maybe it's a good thing I didn't actually pronounce it like that then when I said it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Gosh, show notes. Let me down. This week's news. So, okay, first up, who's heard of D4? Now, we've probably all heard of D4.
Heard of it. Not played it. But no. Heard of it.
Yes. Well, I think that's kind of the problem, isn't it?
Lots of people have, well, not even lots of people have heard about D4. D4's Swery, or Swery 65, as he's otherwise known on Twitter's latest game coming off it's been a while since Deadly Premonition came out. And, you know, it's another kind of weird kind of mystery thing. Only this one's episodic, so it's been released in episodes. And yeah, it's on the Xbox One. We knew it was an Xbox One exclusive to an extent when it was E3 this year. Was it E3 that last really heard from it? Other than what happened then at Tokyo Game Show, where it was kind of released with like little to no proper kind of marketing beforehand.
Just sort of fell out.
Yeah, I'm not sure who hit the button. I don't know if it was Swery agreed to it or if it was Microsoft, but the way Swery's been campaigning on Twitter for this game, I would suggest that there's been a bit of a
boo-boo.
A misdeployment by Microsoft on this side of things.
That sounds like the booth babe.
And it's not been doing very well. In its first week of release, because it's digital only, and it only had 10,000 downloads worldwide.
Ouch.
But that, just worldwide.
Yeah. Is that more than the number of Xbox One consoles currently sold in Japan?
I think it might be.
Yeah, so somebody's buying it, but not necessarily be people in Japan, because I'm not sure if you've heard, but Xbox One console sales in Japan are going horrendously.
Well, I mean, they always have been fairly weak.
Yeah, but not for the reasons that Microsoft think.
the excuses that they give anyway.
Yeah, or the excuses. But anyway, Swery was like asked by somebody on Twitter last week, will it ever, can we have it on PS4? And Swery was like, it's never heading to PS4, so obviously it's a proper exclusivity situation. However, he was quiet on whether or not it might come to PC. So maybe there's hope for PC, because at least that wouldn't be in 100% conflict of interest with Microsoft, being that it would probably be only Windows on PC.
Entire situation is mind-bollocking? Mind-boggling. Because... Sorry?
It's both.
Yes, that's very true. But it's like that. It sounds like, unless, the Swery's got kind of a grudge against like PS4 or something like that, then it sounds like Xbox have kind of bought exclusivity rights but have not bothered to go, hey, by the way, this is a game that's exclusive to us.
I kind of wondered if, they've gone, oh, yes, we'll buy it, blah, 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 sign on the line, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, a while back, and then they've got cold feet on it. So it's, we will do the bare minimum on our contract. There we go. We've released it. And, we've got a little clause or something that says, if it makes enough money, we will fund a second episode or a third episode, but... they've just allowed it to just flop out.
Yeah.
With no push, and that's it. I mean, you know, we're not really interested in doing anymore.
Sverry's Twitter feed since this game's come out has been kind of depressing. His Instagram's been a bit more positive. His Twitter less so, because I followed him ages ago because he's got a habit of actually following people back, which is really nice. And
Social media.
Yeah, that's actually used socially. It's Blimey. Crazy. But anyway, yeah, it's just like I really liked Deadly Premonition. Here's the thing, yeah, that it's one of my favorite games of all time, but I was never sort of, you know, absolutely excited about D4 because it was an Xbox One exclusive. Because Xbox One isn't the kind of console I want to own, and perhaps the problem is that that could be the same for D4's main target audience. It's not the kind of console they want to own.
It's not, well, yeah. I mean, just looking at the numbers, you know, for the numbers sold for the, you know, the console format this generation. Say, the Xbox One is on a back foot already. That's not a good sign.
So, yeah, Suri says D4 will never come to PS4, and I can't get. I'm sort of a bit sad about that, but if there's still the odd little chance that it might come to PC, in which case I'm like, well, I'm not buying an Xbox One for the sake of playing this one game, because
it would take a hell of a lot more than this.
Yeah.
Just for me to, you know, think of, yeah, that Xbox One, it's no longer a very expensive doorstop. That's less appealing than anything else.
Okay, next story. DC is facing fire over messages that could be interpreted from recently licensed T-shirt designs.
Is that literal fire?
I saw these and oh, bloody hell.
One's a gents T-shirt, which features, I don't know if it's a panel from a actual published cartoon. I can tell you that the outfit Superman is wearing in it is from the new 52 Superman comics.
How can you tell? It just looks like the same.
Oh, it's the sort of like polo like neck he's got going on the suit. That's how I know it's New 52.
Maybe he's got a job as a barista because he wanted an iPhone 6.
But basically,
if you think about it, it could do espressos really quickly with his heat vision.
There's this. So it's just this T-shirt with this one panel of Wonder Woman being quite forcibly kissed. She doesn't look 100% comfortable there. I don't know where
it's trying to be a sort of a swept off her feet.
Yeah, but her,
what the hell's happening with her arm though?
Arm and her legs. Well, her arm looks like it's ending in a clenched fist that's somehow turned the wrong way, and her legs are in places that don't make any sense. And I think, well, it's a good thing it's Superman because otherwise they'd be falling over. But in the top left is a jagged thought bubble that says "score" with an exclamation mark, and then a caption box below the pair to the right going "Superman does it again."
See, I don't mind the fact that, you know, it's Wonder Woman and Superman kind of kissing, you know, whether, you know, you kind of deem it as whatever. It's just the fact that it's kind of likening it to, ah, yeah, you know, my boys, homeboys, you know, scored one for the team type thing.
I'm sorry, I kind of like my Kryptonians more refined than this. Maybe that's just me.
I think it's just a bit crap. That's not the one I have, you know, the issue with. I think that one's just a crappy stereotypical.
Yeah. No, it kind of got worse when the ladies' T-shirt that got licensed at the same time has a nice pinky mauve letters training with then followed by bat signal to be Batman's, and then in squiggly stupid character form wife. So everything else was solid. So training to be Batman's and then wife was in
That's really something to aspire to be, isn't it?
I mean, kind of ignoring the fact that you could say, well, training to be Batwoman, training to be Batgirl, training to be Huntress, training to be Oracle, but maybe minus the paralysis. You know, training to be any number of female characters associated with like the life and times of Gotham. I wouldn't say training to be Harley Quinn or any of the villains because, well, actually, that would be quite a cool t-shirt, especially from like a men-hating point of view, because the amount of times that Poison Ivy or even Catwoman and Harley have kind of come up kind of like, oh, fuck men, as in, as in I'd rather cut their heads off or leave them hanging over a tool preppers, you know, that's, you know, what it would have, but instead we've got, you know, in order to be Batman's, you're trained to be Batman's wife, and it's like, well, one, Batman probably wouldn't tell you he was Batman, and then two, the moment he did, you'd be dead, so it doesn't matter what kind of training you did.
Or it could be, oh, Bruce, you're so handsome, when are you going to meet your parents? When are you going to take me home to meet your parents? What, Bruce, why are you crying? I'm just gonna go off and fight crime.
The training might involve tact, I suppose, but at the same time, you probably wouldn't have much training because, or need to do much in order to be about Alfred. But you know, there's already people in Batman's life that do everything else for him, like. Unless you were going to basically learn how to spend Bruce Wayne's money, in which case you might as well not say you're training to be Batman's wife, you're training to be Bruce Wayne's wife.
So training to be a very good accountant.
Very good accountant. Or, I don't know, I think having a diamond rather than a bat signal then would have been more appropriate. Training to be Bruce Wayne's wife and kind of hinting at how you get really good at spending all that money.
It's just the reason this kind of t-shirt really annoys me is it's just, oh no, you can't have an identity. Your identity has to be, you know, your identity, you know, whether it's, you know, yours or, you know, the kind of thing that you
like. It has to be shirt with a male.
It has to hinge, on just being the other half. Is it, what? That's serious. That's the best you can come up with? Of all the, you know, all the characters that are in, you know, the comics, and, you know, bearing in mind I haven't read in a Marvel or DC in decades, and most of my knowledge of them comes from other films and, you know, Arkham games and things like that. Of all the female characters that you could, you know, put on, you know, the front of a t-shirt and, you know, do something with, it's like, no, Batman's wife.
And as I said, in terms of the canon of the comics, it's incredibly troubling because you probably would end up dead.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I think... Obviously, one of the counter criticisms to the criticism that we obviously have here is that, you know, it's all meant to be like in joke, in jest. Don't take it so seriously. And is it me, but anybody that actually buys DC t-shirts to actually, you know, kind of say, "Hey, I'm, you know, into DC," would they really be, you know, wanting to buy these kind of t-shirts? Wouldn't they prefer anything else? Like, I don't know, just Batman logo on?
So this is officially licensed stuff. So you get the well-meaning relative who goes onto the official website selling this stuff. And you end up with a situation where somehow, you know, the Christmas presents, you don't understand how you got them situation.
And we've all had those.
They think they know the hobby.
You know, Batman's wife, but, you know.
Where they think they know what you like, but actually, they've got you something that's not actually as well-meaning as they think it is.
Are you trying to say that this is the DC clothing equivalent of shovelware? Basically, stuff that is based on licenses, but they don't actually take any time or any thought into making it, and just ship it out in order to try and get profit.
Maybe. I think the message I'm putting, I, as a DC fan, when they're being nice, and somebody who likes characters like Batwoman, I find the t-shirt particularly ridiculous. Meanwhile, artist Bill, I want to say his surname, but maybe somebody else would pronounce that surname. Please.
I'm trying to find... Bill Sienkiewicz. Maybe?
Maybe.
Sienkiewicz? Apologies in advance. I mean, massive apologies.
So he took the original panel and asked her to say, like he said, sort of like, please tell me that the original panel, yeah, sure, is on the front, but on the back, you've got Wonder Woman punching Batman in the face with a thought mark saying, or thought bubble or whatever, jagged, saying fail. And it's just kind of like, that also just makes me feel uncomfortable, the idea that that equates as a way to actually undo the damage of the original panel.
By advocating
domestic violence.
Means.
It's like, ah, it's not much better.
No, not really.
I see where he was coming from with it, but...
I think the simple thing that needed to be done was just not having the captions in the first place.
Mm.
Yeah,
then it would have just been a nice, romantic, touching moment between Superman and Wonder Woman.
It's almost like the artwork could carry it.
Yeah.
To be honest, it's kind of a weird thing to stick on a t-shirt because, you know, you don't see, you know, any kind of almost like kissing scenes on a t-shirt. It's just kind of bizarre.
It's also kind of weird to have it on, like, because the style of the shirt is such that it's meant to be a men's, or, you know, it's male t-shirt. And it's kind of weird because you don't tend to get romantic-y type stuff. On, you'll get stuff that is like the school thing and everything, but if it weren't for the captions, as we said, it would actually look kind of romantic. So yeah,
with that one, it is definitely the captions that just, why are you doing that? Whereas with the ladies, you know, t-shirt, it's why.
I mean, the thing is that there are, you know, there's complete decades worth of artwork that they could stick on a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Why this one?
Yeah, and then going back to the, I've just thought of one with the training to be Batman's wife. The dumbest thing is that that's a women's t-shirt. They've got current, you know, Batwoman and Batgirl comics out. Somebody at probably Warner, because obviously they own DC, licensed these things. And it's like, God, what is with your resale of your content, you dumbasses? You could have made the women's t-shirt a flippin' advertising piece for getting them to buy Batwoman or Batgirl comics, you dumbasses. It's a missed opportunity in terms of marketing.
I mean, in terms of the actual design itself, the only thing that actually says or screams like DC is the Bat logo, in which case it's not exactly, you know, kind of a fan favorite logo, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
That's just like a generic Batman logo.
I'm just thinking that if you wanted, you know, something to be, you know, kind of a sort of a, you know, a playful, you know, after Batman way, you could have a Catwoman.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And, you know, there's plenty of really good artwork of Catwoman, you know, that isn't all, you know, TNA.
Yep.
So, you know, you've got all that to, you know, source it from, you know, that people would like and they'd like to wear, and you just have, you know, something that's a bit crap.
Yep. Meanwhile, I'm going to move us on to our next story before we get too depressed. Do not buy that t-shirt for me for Christmas, if you were thinking about that.
If I was going to buy you a t-shirt for Christmas, it'd be a hell of a lot cooler than that.
Good. Interesting bit of research out last week from ICA Partners regarding Kickstarter funding for video games, which is noticeably down on the 2013 numbers. There's several reasons for this. Of course, some of them are guesses on the part of ICA Partners, and some of them are, yeah, that's not going to change for this year. But the number of projects down, well, the number of projects to come out on Kickstarter for 2014 that were for video games were down during the first half of 2014. So, okay, that could be less funding, you know, because there's fewer games going around. The thing is, though, is that for the number of games even out, like, it's not a comparable amount of money that's kind of gone their way. And then the money pledged for the ones that have existed this year is for the same period is like less than half the money for the same period in 2013.
Basically, Kickstarter is a 2013 thing and not a 2014 thing.
Well, certainly
thing.
For video games. I mean, part of the issues that were sort of put together in the report, and we'll be linking to this, because they made their research publicly available, was that a lot of big projects came out in 2013 as well as 2012.
Yeah.
So people bought stuff last year. Obviously, a lot of that they're still waiting for. And then people packed a lot of big things in 2012. But those, obviously, that was when it kind of like kick-started, yeah. Ironically, the kick-starting of games on Kickstarter. So we're kind of like, all the people that are willing to invest in games, they're not willing to invest at the moment because they're still waiting on stuff.
Absolutely. It's for them, they've already stuck money into stuff and have been waiting for absolutely ages. They don't want to just plow more money into this machine where, you know, nothing seems to happen half the time.
I've backed one video game this year versus maybe two or three.
Which video?
I backed Jotun, which was about a Viking warrior girl, teenager, lady. She's feminine. Kicking the ass of various spirits and monsters and stuff.
Okay. Last year you backed Road Redemption?
Was that last year?
I was just thinking there. I apologize in advance. You know, she could, you know, if someone would say something to, you know, that Viking, you know, leader character, and then, you know, she could, just as she's, you know, really punching them or kicking them in the face, someone in the background could be saying, "Odin, he didn't."
No.
I apologize in advance.
Yeah. But I suppose what the research...
Oh, she could say it.
Going back to the research, they were trying to ask whether or not interest in funding Kickstarters through Kickstarter had peaked. And I suppose with the numbers involved, perhaps it has. I mean, I've watched a whole of several games projects this year, which and backed one of them, and they didn't make funding, even though it was a really interesting idea. Mm. And
it all gets refunded if that happens, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, it doesn't get taken out of your account unless it's successful with Kickstarter. Yeah, right. But yeah, the just stuff that I've been looking at hasn't been as successful this year. Graphic novels and comics still seem to be doing okay. I haven't seen anyone write a report on that, but most of the stuff I've been seeing, except for the odd thing, has been making its funding more so than games. No, there's not been many big weird pieces of tech out on Kickstarter this year either that everyone's been desperate to get behind. You, obviously, the equivalent of trying to remember the name, and it's stupid because I know the name. Headset, virtual reality.
Oculus Rift.
There we go. Yeah. We haven't had the next Oculus Rift either on the hardware side, or the next Ouya. But then again, that probably disappointed a lot of people who might have otherwise backed hardware.
That's the thing, you know. There's you know, on Kickstarter, you know, you have to kind of advertise and basically just say that your product is absolutely wonderful and it can do this and can do that and blah, 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 blah. The reality of stuff is very, very different. I think that's to a certain extent part of the problem with the public funding, you know, things from the get-go. It's because they promise, you know, kind of stuff in theory, and then when it's delivered, they can't always match up to the, you know, promises. And so people get disheartened and don't stick, you know, as much money into new stuff.
Just, I think specifically with Ouya, I think it was, you know, the double whammy of people were really desperate for new consoles when that was announced. Because, you know, it was surely, you know, they must be working on, you know, PS4 and, you know, Xbox 720. And it's, well, obviously they were, but, you know, nothing really, you know, concrete had been said about them at all. And then all of a sudden these lot come along and say, well, you know, we're doing a new console here and, you know, can do this, that, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it will be, you know, open, you know, for people to develop on and go, woo! And, you know, so that, I think, you know, that was half of it. And the other half was people hadn't noticed that China was doing this kind of shit for about the last year and a half.
Yeah. Because you had some of that shit.
Yeah. I've still got my my UG007. And it's like, yeah, it's a bit long in the tooth now, you know, when it comes to Android hardware, but plugs into the back of my telly. I can, you know, plug a, you know, any joypad in, and I can control Android games with a joypad on my telly. And that cost me 30 odd quid.
Yeah. I could see why people might be a bit put off by current things. I was just going to say a quote from the ICO partners. Of course, looking at the total amount of money pledged might be a bigger concern. 2013 saw $58 million pledged towards video games, whereas the first half of 2014 stands at just $13.5 million. If 2014's second half is comparable, something that is not easy considering you need a similar number of big hits, 2014 would be less than half of what 2013 has been. A sobering consideration. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of reasons for that. There's, you know, there were, when Kickstarter came along, it took a while for some companies to really get engaged in it. So I think, you know, that's the run-up to about, you know, last year, 2013. So you've got that, and then all these projects that people were wanting to make, and, you know, so put on Kickstarter, and people go, oh, we've been waiting for something like this for years, hooray, and throw money at it. And it's a combination of, well, a lot of these projects didn't come out of nowhere, did they? A lot of them were already sitting around, and they were looking for a different way of funding. So I think, you know, part of it is the reservoir has been, you know, depleted of these things of, well, you know, we're going to try and get funding for these somehow, and wouldn't it be great if we could? And then the people who were wanting these things are now, they've either got their new toys that they've funded through Kickstarter, or they're waiting on an imminent arrival of something.
Yep.
So it's just appetite and supply. I think are both naturally a bit depleted. So I don't think it's the end of Kickstarter. Like, you know, I've seen some people on Twitter say, you know, is this the whole Kickstarter phenomenon winding down? It's like, no, not necessarily. It's just a lot of the interesting things have been, you know, brought out and, you know, or, you know, put up and funded, yeah,
and
or not.
As I've suggested, media that takes less time to produce is still getting funded.
Well, I mean, part of the problem is that, you know, everybody kind of came to Kickstarter with, you know, these grand ideas and whatnot. And in the end, it was kind of this big push to Kickstarter. And what you saw was not kind of a natural level for it. It was an exaggerated level for it.
So what we're seeing now could be the regular level.
Exactly. So, I mean, you get that with, you know, anything. I mean, on Hex about, five things wrong with Final Fantasy VIII, and that went viral for some reason, and we saw a massive spike in that one post, and then it went back to normal again. It was like a probably about a thousandfold, you know, spike. And you know, that kind of thing happens.
Yeah. I'm going to move us on to our next story, which was breaking news earlier today, Monday. And that was that Twin Peaks is coming back in 2016.
She's like, bloody hell.
Yep. New episodes. 9 of them. Showtime Network. Frost and Lynch are behind it.
It's interesting.
Apparently, Lynch is directing all of them, I think.
Excellent.
That's what someone say.
Well, I mean, it's interesting how they've gone for Showtime. I mean, it's, you know, completely understandable because they're the type of network to really do it. What network was it that did the originals again?
Oh, bloody hell.
wasn't, I want to say it wasn't Fox.
I think it was possibly ABC or NBC or something.
Mm.
But it was so, I mean, because it was before X-Files.
Yeah.
By like several years. So,
but I mean, obviously Showtime, you know, has done stuff like Dexter, it's done Californication, it's done Nurse Jackie, all of which are, you know, kind of main characters with, you know, these absolutely debilitating, to a certain extent, you know, kind of personality, not necessarily quirks, but aspects of them that seemingly kind of get them into trouble over and over and over and over again. So, you know, this kind of whole protagonist being nowhere near squeaky clean is...
Yeah. Well, it's certainly going to be the most sort of soap opera type thing that Showtime's going to have had because of the huge cast of characters that all seem to have hands in what's going on, like more so than certainly any of the other shows tend to have. I'm kind of excited about it, but I have to admit that I haven't watched season two of Twin Peaks purely because after having that nice, gentle sort of... What was it? That was like 6 or 9 episodes opening for the first season. The second season is like 22 episodes. And I'm slightly intimidated by the idea of watching 22 episodes of that kind of show.
It is a very dense show in terms of, I don't suppose, pacing and, you know, kind of character interactions and whatnot. I mean... If it was like, oh, 22 episodes of Star Trek or something like that, that's, you know, that's nothing that quite easily breeze through those. But
is
because it's just...
22 episodes of Star Trek? Is it Show Me the Way?
But, I mean, even with, like, X-Files, it's you don't have to watch all the episodes of a season to know what the arc is for that season. Whereas
it's the arc of the Covenant.
Whereas Twin Peaks, well, there are some arguments that there are only certain episodes you need to watch because it did take on this weird soap opera-like quality. So it was like more spread out when the big plot moments were happening.
I mean, speaking of kind of being able to skip over episodes, I found that I can actually get through the last couple of seasons of Doctor Who by skipping out all of the, you know, standalone episodes that are just, you know, kind of... Ugh. And just kind of going for the actual, you know, main arc.
Yeah, there's a lot of new Who that I'd skip through.
Mm.
It's like pretty much everything with Catherine Tate.
There's not much known, I want to point out, about the new Twin Peaks yet, other than that the original people behind it.
I mean, it's kind of weird how nowadays, like, projects get announced before they've even begun.
If they're shown in 2016, that means that they're going to be filming next year, essentially.
So yeah, they're definitely very early on into the project, and
I think it's written. That's
you reckon?
Might be written.
Well, I reckon the arc might be written.
Yeah, and yeah, it's kind of weird. It never used to be like that.
Book of you know, weird shit that we can do. You know, written down as notes.
I mean, do you think it's basically because, you know, technology has allowed stuff to be done faster, or is it just a case of they know that people will be, you know, kind of tuning in for this? You know, so they've got like a longer period to market
it. It means that they've got a 2-year hype machine to maintain.
Now,
which is a bit much. Yeah.
I was wondering here because it said at the end of the, you know, the trailer.
Teaser,
yes. That's true. It's not a trailer, is it? One of the characters saying, you know, something like, you know, see you in 25 years. Now, I can't remember if it actually said that at the end of the episode. I watched them when they were on. And I have not watched them since.
You know what that's going to make you do? It's going to want to make you actually buy the DVDs rewatch them.
Don't forget, though, the Blu-ray version of the gold DVD collection came out this year, which I think they might have remastered a bit. So,
they're probably dropping up sales for their own old series.
So everyone can spend 2 years trying to get their heads around this, and you know, almost 2 years. The show's going to basically start on the sort of date of the sort of 25th anniversary, basically. So yeah, yeah. I'm going to move this because it's pure speculation at this point. We don't know how much, if any, of the original cast are going to be back, kind of thing. So yeah, that we might as well move on at this point to what we've been up to. Does anyone want to discuss Doctor Who or beyond
things? Let's kill the moon.
I mean, I know a lot of people that I've, you know, heard talking about the, you know, Let's Kill the Moon. It wasn't a good episode. It was very much not a good episode. What did you feel about it, Redroid?
I actually enjoyed it a bit more than several episodes this season.
Sorry. I'm sorry.
For a start, I mean, what... you know, in comparison with the Robin Hood episode, which I just wanted to gouge my brain out.
I felt quite cathartic when Clara finally yelled at him about being an ass.
I really liked that bit.
It felt quite warranted.
I didn't think it was warranted because, you know, the Doctor's a blooming time traveller. You know, Clara would have been like, well, chances are he probably kind of went to the future and then kind of found out what happened and then come back to, you know.
Try rationalising that when you're really freaking scared that it's all going to go horribly, horribly wrong.
And time traveller!
But it's also cumulative because he has been, you know, treating her and other humans badly, basically, since he regenerated. So, you know, it is that, you know, the whole thing of, you know, where she was saying, oh, you know, just, you know, silly little humans that can just pat them on the head. So, yeah, I thought, actually, yeah. Especially with this season where I've been really liking Clara, whereas before, I just couldn't give a toss. But for some reason, you know, with Peter Capaldi's Doctor to bounce off, you know, she's coming to her own. And I actually don't mind Mr. Pink either. Which kind of surprises me because I usually, you know, detest when they have a, you know, a romantic interest sort of, you know, dropped in from the sky. But yeah, I don't mind him. I'm quite liking her. And it is part of this new Doctor where he does know better. He is smart, and he makes a point of you know, pointing out just how smart he is in comparison with everyone else. And when it comes down to it, he buggered off and left her with a, you know, life or death, possibly for billions, decision. And it was only when she pressed the cancel button, spoilers, that he came back. So, yeah.
Okay.
Whereas, how, you know, putting on my science hat, which I've learned to, you know, keep off while I'm watching, you know, New Who, because otherwise it would just drive me absolutely insane.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, the whole thing with space spiders being on bacteria. It's like, what? And the moon putting on weight. The moon putting on weight from where? Because if it was an egg, then that would be a closed system.
Exactly.
So where would it be? Yeah, it's just, you know, the stuff like that, it made no sense other than we're not going to have people trying to do a moonwalk.
Okay, what other than who have you been up to?
Well, with the Day of Dread this week.
Did you re-watch Dread?
Day of Dread?
Yeah,
it was the
Dread.
1st of October.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I thought you meant, you know, just watching Judge Dredd all day. I was like, can do that once, maybe twice, but any more than that, and that's just getting excessive.
Be a bit much.
Unless you're going on super slow-mo.
Did you take some slow-mo, or are you okay?
Well, the problem with that would be if you took some slow-mo before watching it, and then it went, the bits where they have characters on slow-mo in the film.
Yeah. Oh my god.
It would be like reverse Inception.
Time would start to flow differently entirely.
Yeah.
Wow.
But it's something like the third time I've watched, you know, Dread. Weirdly enough, I think I've only seen the Stallone one once.
I wonder where that is.
And that was in the cinema.
I wonder where that is.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm not sure if people have realised that I have little patience for people who support the 90s Stallone. If I dread, I find no charm in it whatsoever. But that might be because I've read a lot of the comics.
I find a little bit of charm in it, but I much prefer Demolition Man because I don't really want to say similar because, you know, the only thing that's similar about it is, you know, kind of the whole futuristic, you know, kind of stuff. But, yeah, I really did like Demolition Man. You know, dumb action movie, but...
Yeah, I did in its own way. But, yeah, the Stallone Dread film.
Mm.
Have you been up to anything else?
Well, unfortunately, it's only been for a few hours today. But all the reviews came out for Alien Isolation, and you know, most of them were saying this is bloody good. Maybe a little bit long overall, but you know, this is a bloody good game, and I enjoyed what I'd played of it from EGX, and I thought, I don't think I'm going to bother with it. I'm going to wait until it's cheaper, and then Louis Proctor. Posted a cheaper price for it for the pre-order, and it was I seem to have suddenly bought it for £22.
Fair enough.
On Steam. So, and I've been, you know, waiting, and you know, thought, right, when is it going to unlock? Because thought, I know, preload it obviously, and then it's, you know, it's all done. When's it going to be unlocked? Right, Tuesday. A pain in the ass. And then I find out that technically that was 4 p.m. today.
Mm.
So it was woohoo, and so I played a few hours of it, and so far I've only kind of encountered the alien once. I'm not going to, you know, spoil or anything, but played it for a few hours. It looks really good, and on my PC setup, which, you know, is by no means, you know, the top that I could get, it seems to run on ultra with everything at 60 frames a second at 1080p. So,
nice.
I'm getting a very nice experience with it.
Are you scared yet?
It's unsettled me once or twice, but it's done it in the typical way of you're hearing voices all around. Well, not voices. You're hearing sort of thumps and noises all around you. You've just seen someone killed. And then you have to go into, you know, dark areas just with a torch.
You said that some reviews have said that it's a little bit too long.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's that's not a very common complaint nowadays, is it?
It's not, but I can understand that. There have been complaints when games have been too short.
Yeah.
So I can see where the drive to, you know, pad it out a bit, because apparently later on there's, you know, quite significant amounts of backtracking and, you know, fetching one thing from one area that you've already been and taking it to another that you've already been, you know, that kind of thing. And I don't know how much of a problem that will be, but I think the criticism was that it was difficult to maintain the atmosphere of, you know, sort of uneasiness and dread.
Dread. Sorry.
<D-d-d-lure>. And I actually read a Dread versus Alien comic years ago, but yeah. Anyway. But from what I've seen of it so far, I've taken over a dozen screenshots of it, and that's just because the ships that you're on and the, you know, the locations you're in look great.
I don't want to sound like I'm a sales pitch at the moment, but you saying about the comic has reminded me that I did see an ad today that announced that the sort of collected version of Judge Dredd versus Aliens versus Predator is coming out in hard copy this Thursday in the UK.
See, I am going to have to, because I read 2000 AD and Dredd the magazine for quite a while. And then I just stopped because I just ran out of space. I had cupboards full of, you know, of them, so I gave them away to a friend. you know, who hadn't read them? And he was, well, you know, I'm not going to read them again. And it's like, yeah, you know, hindsight, because I started around something like Prog 550.
Wow. See, so they had issue 1900 out a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, they did. So it made me feel a little bit old. And, you know, speaking of stuff like that, I did appreciate in Dread a lot of the, you know, the nods, like some of the graffiti you saw.
Mm.
Like they had a chopper with a, you know, with a smiley face in the O. Just in one of the shots as it was panning up in, you know, in the film. And it was like, yay, chopper. I remember in that. But yeah, I've not read Dread in ages. But yeah, I really should catch up. And with Alien Isolation, with the first few hours, it looks and sounds gorgeous because it's very atmospheric and it's got little snippets of the original Alien soundtrack.
Does it make up for Colonial Marines?
I don't know yet, but so far, yes.
Okay. Paul, what have you been up to?
I'm surprised Retroid even admitted Colonial Marines exists.
I have to. It's part of the therapy.
Yeah, anyway, sorry. I've been playing a little bit, and I do mean a little bit, of Smash Bros. For the 3DS.
Really?
You still have a 3DS that's in one piece?
Yes. I haven't been playing it, you know, for absolutely ages, but, you know, I got it. Because I could get it for free through various means, not legally.
Nothing that involves talking with games PR before anyone asks. This was purely due to reward systems that had been saved up on.
Mm.
Because Nintendo have been doing that a fair amount with their games, so that is to be applauded.
But this is, can I say, more of a work-based reward system. Saving had happened, and it was applied.
Yeah. And, you know, I got it because, you know, yay, Smash Bros.
button masher.
Yeah, it's
there was a lot of swearing going on the other night when you were playing it beside me. I got a bit alarmed.
Oh, that dog and that bloody duck. So one of the secret characters is the Duck Hunt dog and a duck and... That dog was giving me so much hassle when I was trying to unlock him.
Did you get there?
Yeah, I got there in the end. And then I went through again, and, you know, oh, new challenger approaching. Oh, Mr. Game & Watch. Okay, let's have a go at him. Bam, I get killed.
Was I trying to play Silent Hill whilst you were playing this? Initially on Friday night.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
God. Yeah, that's why it was getting a bit iffy for me, because you were shouting all that. And I was a super creepy mode. In terms of games, so yeah. But anyway,
I was shouting.
You did shout quite loudly. There was swearing. There were swears. Lots of swears.
This is why I don't play online.
But what are you thinking of it so far from what you have played?
It's weird being on such a small screen. It can sometimes, you know, feel like you don't really have quite the control that you want. Because, you know, with Smash Bros, it's always a case of, Smash Brothers.
I was going to say, I refuse to call it Smash Bros.
But, yeah, whatever. when it comes to a game like that, it's not just about timings, it's also about space. And sometimes, you know, there's
time is what you're saying, space
does
and time.
Does it go timey-wimey?
God damn you two. But yeah, because it's such... I suppose that's why it's such a brilliantly competitive game, because, you know, it's a bit like other beat-em-ups where, you know, you have kind of set moves and whatnot, and there's strategy in figuring out as fast as you can which move you should do to counteract an opponent's move. But only, you know, with four players all at the same time, and it's much more difficult to judge on at least the regular 3DS screen. On a 3DS XL, I'd imagine it would be quite a bit easier.
I saw a lot of 3DS XLs you were going to expand.
I'm not sure if listeners can hear this, but I think all the rain just suddenly came along.
Is that what that was?
Yeah, that's rain.
Bloody hell. You've got all the rain.
We got all the rain. We're on a hill. No,
you've got all the rain. We haven't.
No, that's air.
That's... Oh, yeah.
Sorry, people. But, yeah, so you've been enjoying Smash Bros.
I
except for the shouting.
Yeah, I mean, it's... I like the fact that, you know, there's plenty to unlock.
Yeah.
You know, so... keep on playing through the game and you unlock stuff, you know, and blah blah blah. So I'm kind of enjoying it in that respect, but I haven't really managed to get that much more of a chance to play it, despite the fact that, you know, I've owned it since Friday. You know, I've been working all weekend and, you know, I've been having to do this and that, you know, outside, and yeah, just haven't had really that much time to play it yet. But on the whole, it's a Smash Bros. Game. It doesn't feel like anything special yet. I mean, it's got
sacrilege.
Yeah, it's got kind of a slight RPG system element to it, where you can customize the characters to have new moves and whatnot, and you can unlock those moves by, you know, just basically playing through the game's, you know, kind of campaign mode and whatnot. Well, I say campaign, it's actually, you know, just classic mode,
more fights.
which is kind of configured slightly more interestingly, and yeah, there's certain kind of objects that you can get to customize your Mii fighters in there as well, so there is quite a bit of customization to it, which is kind of bizarre in a Smash Brothers game. God damn it, I'm losing points here. Anyway, I think we should move on to Emily.
Okay, but then obviously I wasn't on last week, but I really want to tell you about this game because it's so amazing. It's by The Astronauts. It's an indie title. And it's called The Vanishing of Ethan Carter. You might have heard murmurings about it, and it's out on Steam right now. It's meant to be coming to PS4 sometime next year. And it's kind of like a weird mystery detective supernatural thing. It's a nice kind of afternoon's worth, or evening's worth if you want to be super creepy, sort of worth of play. And you play this as this guy called Paul Prospero, as he investigates the vanishing of Ethan Carter, who's some young kid who's disappeared from this idyllic pastoral location, which looks suspiciously like it's somewhere in maybe like the Alps, due purely to all the natural lakes and man-made lakes that are around and the architecture. That's what that reminded me of. You know, just sort of like hidden valleys away, sort of hidden and stuff, and a bit forest and all that. And yeah, it was really interesting. I've got a non-spoilery review of it up on Hex at the moment. But it was just... Oh, it was satisfying to play because there were puzzles throughout that you had to solve, like, one or two puzzles a go in order to progress the story. Mm. But they weren't puzzles that you could instantly figure out. You had to think about what you were doing, have a look around and stuff and think some more. But you could do it without resorting to guides, because they logically slotted together eventually. Like, you sort of, if you just made sure that you looked at everything and just, yeah, it wasn't the kind of obscure puzzles that I then faced in Silent Hill this weekend. That's what I'm trying to say. This is the comparison I'm trying to draw, because the other game I've played this week was Silent Hill. For the first time, the original game, completed it, got one of the good endings.
You completed it, excellent.
Yeah, there was perhaps one, maybe two puzzles I could answer for myself without help. But I resorted to a guide for most of it because it was just ridiculous, the expectations it placed on you to run around and not die. I understood that I needed to conserve both healing items and ammo. And
yeah,
of course,
you definitely have to.
And that, of course, became incredibly difficult the more you explored. Like, it punished you for trying to figure things out for yourself, because you'd walk around and just get mauled. And it's like, but you needed to walk around in order to figure out all the parts necessary to solve a complete puzzle in one bit. And then another bit, and then another. And it was just the fact that it constantly punished you for exploration, which really pissed me off.
Well, I mean, I remember playing Silent Hill not long after it first came out. And I think I was stuck on one puzzle in the school with the bird poem or whatnot. And the key piano.
Yeah.
And I could not figure that out whatsoever. It made no sense to me, the connection between those two things. And even then, I had to resort to a guide in, you know, kind of a PlayStation magazine in order to, you know, actually get any further. And that's just quite bad.
Yeah, it was kind of bad games. I said bad games. One thing I was wondering, and I was discussing it with some friends who watched me play like the last half of the game, and actually helped me when the maps got a bit confusing, i.e. the last level where you have no map.
You can't go this way, and you can't go that way. And you go, well, but you've got to get here, and you're on there.
Yeah, but no, the what was I going to say? Was it about the bird puzzle? Was it something else?
Oh.
I don't know. I just...
That's how Silent Hill works.
Yeah. No, I remember now. It was the fact that some of the puzzles, maybe they would have been more or easier to solve if you'd been playing it in the Japanese version or were from a Japanese cultural background. Certainly for... one of the puzzles, which was involving some coloured plaques, which also happened to have animals on them, or sort of symbols, and like there was a cat, there was a hatter, a queen, and a tortoise, or a turtle. I'm trying to think whether or not, because obviously it had an American translation, whether or not they did their usual thing when it comes to that animal, or those animals, rather. And it was like, well, I remember there being quite a... turtles or tortoises have some interesting kind of like places in various bits of religious spiritualism in that part of the world.
Yeah, I think I remember, you know, some puzzles like that, and it was only because I was up on, you know, some of my, you know, Japanese folklore.
Yeah.
That it made sense. So,
That made me think that, yeah, it didn't translate that well to a Western audience. That it kind of handicapped you a bit because you obviously hadn't been brought up necessarily on some of the cultural background that the puzzles were based on. So, yeah, but I've got a... because obviously we've had the game for a while and this was my first time playing it, and so we've got a full-on pile of shame going up when this episode's out tomorrow. Well, tomorrow. I say tomorrow. Now, when you're listening, hopefully on a Tuesday, there'll be a thing.
Yes.
But yeah. Okay, I think we should probably move.
Just before we do, I was just going to say the school in you know, the first Silent Hill was you know, particularly, you know, freaky part of it.
Yeah.
I remember that. And I think it got not so much censored but altered.
Yes.
So what's the differences?
In both America and Europe. But Europe... especially because I think one of the enemies actually was meant to resemble basically a kid wielding a knife without any clothes on.
Oh. So that would be the weird little things that look like penguins of knives instead that were brown.
Yeah, I think in the European version it's meant to be a case of them being taken out altogether and replaced with, you know, something, some other creature that would otherwise be just... towards the end of the game instead.
I think I might have an early version
of
it then, because they seemed like they definitely seemed like children. They were you know, child shaped and it's a little bit freaky being chased around by, you know, demonic ghostly, so that, because they're using the sort of PS1 transparency, aren't they, so they look sort of like almost this smoky, you know, ghost smoke effect.
Yeah.
And is that, being chased around by, you know, tiny little goose children in an abandoned school. Is it?
I'm going to move us on to we just wanted to do a fun feature this week. Oh, I did.
For talking about Silent Hill.
Was just all the crap that's still going on in regards to stuff on that. I didn't want to do anything super serious about video games.
Fair enough.
Mm.
Let's talk about cats.
Yeah, we could talk about cats. I mean, I'm surprised, actually, maybe you didn't go for a cat as your casting choice, maybe, in this. As we I wanted us to talk about who would we want to play us in a film about our life story. just before.
How did this come about?
This came about due to a strange train of thought I had on a Sunday morning. And that's pretty much it. Yeah.
What? There's nothing, no other story behind there?
Oh, I just had one of those moments, okay, yesterday morning, which was just like, this is the opening scene of some kind of either life story type film or like a romantic, maybe comedy, maybe not, involving a Facebook message. And I'm not going to say who, what, where and why and how, but it was just, I hadn't heard from someone in like forever and I never expected to ever hear from them again, and I kind of wish they hadn't contacted me, and it made me reflect, well, if this was going to be like the inciting incident in a film, which would also happen at the beginning of a film, who would I want playing me? And I will tell you in a moment, but first, Cookie did actually say who he would want playing him, and that was Jack Black.
I could kind of see that. Although Jack Black's very full on, whereas Cookie's very laid back.
It'd be quite interesting trying to get Jack Black to be a bit laid back.
Very, very mellow, Jack.
I'm sorry, I'll leave some, say, yeah, that was Cookie's choice. I decided that I wanted Emma Watson to play me.
Why is that? Why Emma Watson?
Well, was it for reasons?
It was because she seems to share similar values to me, which means that then she'd be able to handle various aspects of my life involving gender inequality.
This bodes well for my choice.
And she's English, because it'd be nice to be played by an English actress. And I actually think she
But not from Cornwall.
I don't care if she's not from Cornwall. She's got that whole...
Oh, why do you hate people from Cornwall?
She's got that whole... She, you know, she's already previously played a slightly geeky character that's into her books. So it's not going to be very far for her to kind of go that way again. It'd be absolutely fine.
It does make me wonder how many young women there are in the UK that would be like, you know what Emma Watson can play me to?
Yeah, so I would like to have Emma Watson as my casting choice. When I write this extremely self-indulgent film script about my life story, and then sell it to Hollywood's, and I will push for Emma Watson to be playing me.
I could not imagine.
I'd be curious how she would podcast.
Yeah, I reckon podcasting quite well. Emma Watson would.
Do you think?
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. But to be honest, I don't really understand why there'd be a film about me, because I get bored to tears by my life, let alone anybody watching it.
Oh no, but you'll be the comic relief, because you've got this habit of, like, in my life, like doing these funny little moments where you try to impersonate people and tell really funny jokes.
Was that a cue for me to do something then?
That was a cue for you to be like, oh, or what the hell are you talking about?
Instead, I'm just like staring there back blankly at you going, hmm?
Yeah.
It's one of those staring blankly moments.
Yes.
But yeah, so awesome. But Retroid. This is because you were completely shocked by the subject of discussion, wasn't it? That's really why you chose this individual.
And I could not think of someone. Sitting there, you know, looking at the screen and going, no, nothing's coming. And you go, who would I just like, full stop? You know, not because, you know, they're physically like me. I thought, maybe, you know, similar values, someone I admire. And I thought, Patrick Stewart. You're going to add Patrick Stewart with a ponytail.
That's quite a mind-blowing image.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
You see, it makes me wonder whether this this theoretical film about your life story, would that start as a kid? Because I think the concept of Patrick Stewart, you know, basically his head like on a kid would be completely mind-blowing.
I think if any actor could, you know, pull that off, it would be Patrick Stewart.
I did have some alternative casting choices you could call for.
Oh god.
Okay. Okay. Tom Hiddleston. Or the Cumberbatch.
The Cumberbatch.
Oh, we might have lightning now. That's good. There was a sudden flash outside. Oh. There's a and thunder, there's rum- thunder. Paul, quickly, because I think we're going to have to wrap this up for the sake of the equipment.
Okay, well, me, I've gone for Kit Harington, who plays Jon Snow in Game of Thrones. And that is mostly because, I don't know, he seems like a fairly decent guy, and he kind of looks like me slightly, possibly.
I think he'd look good beside Emma Watson. Yeah.
Are you trying to suddenly do the adult version of her life story now?
No one do the fanfic of that.
At the same time, though, it'd be like if it's a romantic comedy that's about my life story and you're in it and you're going to have to be there beside me, kissing me in the film.
That's... And you're going to be watching this for the first time in the cinema and seeing Emma Watson kissing Jon Snow.
This has suddenly taken a sexy turn.
And then all of a sudden, John pulls off and says, "I'm sorry. I know nothing."
Oh, dear. See, had to, but yeah, with me, Patrick Stewart, he and, you know, Captain Picard, social justice warrior.
But do we know whether or not Patrick Stewart shares the love of tea that Picard does? Because you don't like tea.
No, I don't like tea. Don't like I tea. Swear I'm English.
Well,
I swear I'm English.
You don't like tea.
I'm not a fan of tea, to be honest, in general. I prefer coffee. Yeah.
Well, you see, broken Britain. Cameron's Britain.
If I remember my weird bits of historical context type history that I got taught as part of my degree and all research as part of the damn thing, coffee was popular in this country before tea, and then I think a supply issue happened or something, or somebody just brought in a lot of tea and that quickly switched.
A lot of tea and a lack of imagination.
But the coffee houses of ye olde days were seen as hotbeds of dissent and, you know, out there views and dangerous places that no right moral person should be seen in. Yep. That was for coffee, not gin, which was also very popular at the time, but coffee.
Now it's just Starbucks and stuff that are, like, you know, morally, you know,
ambiguous.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would like to say that is all we've got time for this week.
Because the lightning is coming to get us.
The weather's really coming in.
I mean, it's even infected the site. Have you seen the header? Well, not the header, the...
Oh yeah, if you go to hexdimension.com, it's a bit interesting on the top of the website at the moment. Bit creepy, bit scary.
Really?
Well, if you're not expecting it, and suddenly you're like, "Why the hell is there this going on?" It's a bit, you know.
It's not the black-eyed ghost girl that's been in The Star and such, is it?
Oh god.
The black. Somebody gave a ghost girl a black eye. That's mean.
It was
domestic abuse for the non-living.
Not good. But I'm afraid that is all we've got time for this week. So it's goodbye from...
It's goodnight from me, Paul Wood. I'm RetroRod on Eurogamer.net and SuperRetroRod on Twitter.
It's goodnight from me, Paul Blewett. And I'm on Twitter as Paul Blair.
As Paul Blewett, yeah. Paul Blair. And it's goodnight from me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter as EK6891. There's cool stuff happening on geekyknittingexperiments.tumblr.com, including access to a tea cozy pattern to make a tea cozy that has the sigil of House Stark on the side of it. Both sides, in fact.
Woo.
Yeah, yeah. So you know you want to visit my little knitting blog and
it's all rock and roll.
Make a tea cozy. Unless of course you're retroid, in which case you don't like tea.
That's because tea's horrible. defense.
You can find Nerd Assemble over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk, and you can also find us on iTunes, Stitcher, we're on Twitter at Nerd Podcast, plus we're on Facebook and Google Plus as Nerd Assemble Podcast. Obviously don't forget to check hexdimension.com because stuff. Also, if you haven't signed up before to the newsletter for Hex Dimension, there's actually a competition going on at the moment in which you could win a copy of a science fiction novel called Acceptance by Jeff Vandermeer.
So, it's certainly easier than winning a lottery.
Yeah, it's actually, it's definitely easier to win a copy of this book than winning the lottery. So, you know, check out Hex Dimension.
All you have to do is sign up to the newsletter. There's not even, you know, any kind of share this.
Yeah, it's just a weekly newsletter with roundups of content, and we won't be selling your email address on to dubious third parties that might want to, I don't know, spam you with offers of Ugg boots and sunglasses.
Well, what have you said that? That's a bit like saying to, you know, our listeners, it's all right, we won't kill you. We won't come into your homes while you're sleeping in your beds. We will not get out the steak knife and just start taking off little pieces of skin from your arms.
That's so peaceful.
We won't do that, so it's all right.
Oh, good night.
Good night.
Good night.